I'm Frank Vaughn. It is January 10th, 2025, and here we are on this cold January morning to revisit the subject of Canada versus the United States and Canada versus itself. I talked in the first video, which you should go and watch before you watch this one, I talked about a term called casus belli, which is a justification for the undermining of a nation. Specifically, it refers to a justification for war. But war can mean many things, economic, political, and military. I talked about the very real human trafficking threat that Canada represents to the United States, the fentanyl, cartel-linked fentanyl production, which accesses the U.S. market through our porous border, among other things. But today, I want to address, as a start to this video, the Chinese threat, because I didn't talk about that very much. The first thing I want to dispense with are the people who say, in the same breath, my forefathers didn't die for this nation so that the Americans could rule it, and then say, China will buy our goods, and we will look to China for protection. Are you people high? If you had a choice, as the world's plaything, and I should say, the most likely outcome for Canada in all of this is that the status quo pervades, the Americans get a better deal, and we keep going on with this horribly broken federation and all of the obstacles that I spelled out in part one of this series in terms of how backwards Canada is and how resistant Canada is to change because of all the vested interests that take advantage of the situation at you, the citizens, at your expense. China is not a hero in this story. China is already very active in Canada. They operate secret police stations. They harass our citizens. They target dissidents who have found refuge here from their totalitarianism on our soil. 25%, and this is a rough estimate. It's actually not that rough, but it's rounded. 25% of oil production coming out of Alberta is dominated by a company called Syncrude. Have you heard their name? I almost guarantee that most of you don't know what Syncrude is. China is very active in the Canadian oil industry. Now, they can be replaced and they can be rectified. But you have to understand that China's already here. Chinese money, and we're talking about Communist Party-affiliated money, is working all through our real estate sector and is part of why housing is so broken. Foreign investment is part of this equation. They're in our mineral industries, controlling the production of raw materials that we then export to China. And even if you want to look to the Chinese market, for salvation from the tariffs that are going to come down on us from the United States, a very likely outcome, we don't have the infrastructure. It's repulsive on the one hand that people would look to China to protect us from the United States. I mean, are you high? I said it once, I'll say it again. Are you high? If you had to choose between being part of the United States and part of China, if you're choosing China, you are cutting off your legs to spite your pinky finger, giving you a little bit of pain. Completely absurd, a notion that should be abandoned, a notion that is only supported by the most ignorant members of our population. But let's set all of that aside for a moment and pretend that China is a legitimate source of salvation. The infrastructure for them to replace the American market, to help us avoid a complete and total currency collapse, you could see a 30-cent dollar by June or July, by the summer of this year, not next year, very soon in the future, if the Americans go to economic war with us. The infrastructure doesn't exist. Now, why does the infrastructure not exist? Because the government in Ottawa has resisted it. Whether it's expansion of Trans Mountain, whether it is Energy East, all of the things that could make the production powerhouse of Canada, which is the West, more independent and more fortified and more versatile against an American trade war have been actively opposed by Ottawa. Don't blame me for telling you this. Blame your politicians, whether it was the Harper government, the Trudeau government, or the governments that came before, Mulroney, Cretchen, back Trudeau, all the way back to Diefenbaker, who have been slowly undermining the national identity and the versatility of Canada, up to the point where Trudeau, when he won in 2015, became the first proponent of post-nationalism, something I touched on in part one. He's literally said there is no core Canadian identity. He has admired the totalitarianism of the Chinese, and he has said we are the first post-national state that has nothing at our center. We must celebrate the identities of all the newcomers and all the people who are coming in. We cannot celebrate Canada. All of a sudden, these people have become born-again nationalists, and they want you to believe in the flag. And why is that? What is the national identity that they have left you? And so much of it comes down to we are not American. And if that's the case, we are not American, are we then Chinese? Are we then proponents of the Chinese Communist Party? At any rate, it's not a viable solution. China cannot save us from the consequences of a massive trade war with the United States. We export a fraction of our oil to Chinese markets right now. The vast majority, 90% of it, goes south of the border and from there is distributed to the world. And we are not resilient when it comes to resources. We import the majority of our crude from Saudi Arabia, Algeria, and Nigeria. Isn't that crazy? Isn't it crazy that Canada, with its vast oil reserves and wealth and natural gas and all the things that we have, are morbidly dependent on some of the worst regimes in the world? This is the deliberate result of decades of decision-making in Ottawa. And at the same time, as they have destroyed our resilience and they have resisted the development of Western energy, they dare rob the West of its wealth through equalization and have made it very difficult to do anything about it. Because you can tweak the formula, but you have to open the Constitution up to do anything permanent about it. And I talked in the last video, which again, you should watch before you watch this one so I don't repeat myself too much. All of our problems go back to the way we are federated, and it is so far away in the distance. If the status quo is maintained and we make a deal with the United States and we just keep things going, it is not to our advantage because the solutions to this decaying federation are so far off in the distance. Because political will is non-existent. All people can do right now is talk about how they're not American. Most of the people who are talking, using these talking points, and I'm not condemning Canada, I'm not saying give up on the project. I'm trying to realistically give you an assessment of how broken on the rocks we are. Most of the people who are talking this way, they don't know how the Senate is structured. They don't know what the Governor General is. Most of them don't know we still have a king. Most of them don't know how unfair this so-called democracy actually is. Most of them don't know that Americans have far superior rights than we do. Our charter is full of holes. And the Americans have a wonderful constitution. And they have a very well-layered system. It has its problems, but it's better. Now let's get into the cautionary tale when it comes to the Americans. It's not all roses. If there was a potential partnership with the United States, if one province leaves this confederation, the entire project is over, which is why I think everybody's presenting a united front. But this idea, like Daniel Smith talking about how Canada is strong and united and how the West is part of it, is really tone deaf because Ottawa has been disadvantaging the West for so long. She's underplaying the very real legitimate concerns that Western Canadians have with the Federation, which, again, solutions to are so far down the road. Like, the political will just doesn't exist. But let's talk about the problems with the incoming administration and what's about to happen in the United States. Trump is an unbelievably historical character. He wasn't his first term, but this second term is going to be that on steroids. It's like a 10x difference. He's not even in office yet, and the entire world is changing already. Europe is talking about remigration. Canada is looking at sending millions of people back to their home countries. There's a lot of changes already happening. And Donald Trump memeing online about taking over Canada, Greenland, the Panama Canal has caused serious reaction in the world. These are things to take seriously. But let's talk about some of the potential negatives. What if Donald Trump is just an agent of globalism? What if he's just an agent of internationalism? What if his intention is to just unite North America so that the agenda can move forward? I'm not so sure about that. I think he is a very different kind of leader, but I can't say it's not a possibility that we could just end up in a centralized superstate with even less rights and privileges in the world and being ruled by a significantly bigger nation. A thing that was brought up in the comments that should actually be paid attention to is, what about water? Will he drain the Great Lakes to try and deal with overpopulation in the southwest of the United States? That's a possibility. Big changes would be afoot if the Americans were actually successful in annexing Canada. What about pensions? Obligations when it comes to the Canada Pension Plan or the old age pension, or a little silver lining. Would Donald Trump, if he took over the country, honor Jagmeet Singh's pension? One has to hope he would not. Another comment that came up was, they'll just come up here and they'll hunt all our deer. That's actually a real concern. It was kind of a lighthearted comment, but what if Americans mass invade Canada to take all our natural resources? Again, states' rights are pretty extensive. There's a lot that states could do. If we had statehood in this country for the individual regions or the individual provinces, there's a lot that they could do to limit that impact. These are all things that would have to be ironed out once the takeover was realized. Like once it was a fait accompli, there's a lot of negotiations to make sure it goes smooth because the Americans cannot afford to have it not go smooth if it were to happen. Now, I'm just going to remind you, I'm not even saying it's likely. I'm giving it a 1 to 5 and a 1 to 10 chance because I think the status quo serves them better than it serves us. We're in a bad spot. Our politicians have left us in a bad spot. If the Americans were to successfully take us over, yes, they would gain a lot, but they inherit a ton of problems. So I think they'd rather leave it to the Canadian citizen to suffer while they just get the economic advantages, which is one of the problems with negotiating a trade treaty that they're happy with. They have all the leverage, so they're going to get a lot of what they want. It's going to disadvantage you. You lose as a Canadian citizen no matter what happens. There are silver linings. There are threads that could take us to a better place, but almost none of them exist inside of this federation. You want Pierre Poilievre to talk about electoral reform and a voted for Senate and the Governor General and all these ideas that I talked about or even more expansive ideas? He can't open the Constitution. No one's going to let him. This federation's broken. Like, people need to figure that out. Anyway, they would have there's a risk that Canada would just become a simple 51st state. That's another risk. It would be a very dysfunctional 51st state. If Canada were to join the United States, we would need at the very least regional statehood or statehood for the individual provinces. You'd have to do it. Otherwise, it's not going to make any sense. A lot of the broken aspects of the federation would transfer to that big, ridiculous 51st state because it doesn't work. Quebec's interests are completely different from Alberta and Saskatchewan's interests. That would have to be respected. And if it wasn't, and that's my point, it's a con. We talked about water. We would inherit, as Canadians, we would inherit the U.S. empire. It becomes our empire, and their foreign policy becomes our foreign policy. Now, that would be mitigated by the fact that I think the Trumpian era is going to try and realign the world in such a way that there is a new American, I wouldn't call it isolationism, but reluctance, as America tries to rebuild its strength in this new century, a reluctance to engage in the baggage of the old world. There's a lot of work to do on this side of the pond, and I think that's what they're going to focus on. So the U.S. imperial problem becomes less of a concern, but it is still a concern. Let me just, I actually made some notes. I never make notes, but I wanted to make sure I touched on a lot of stuff. There's also nascent resistance. We talked about that a little bit, but also native resistance. What happens to those who are advantaged by the Indian Act, even though most of the native population is disadvantaged by the Indian Act? It's an inherently racist document. I've talked about this before. It should be repealed and reformed. And I honestly think natives should have property rights, which they don't have. They have the freedom to leave the reserve, but they don't have the freedom to own or have a stake in the reserves, which is, I think, a source of a lot of the problems. The bands do very well, or the band chiefs, the councils do very well, but the people suffer. And there's also, I don't think it would be pretty. I think there would be some heavy resistance there. There's also the issue of, and we talked about this a little bit, that Trump might be not the agent of change or positive change. I want to talk about the influence of the tech lords, Elon Musk. The development of Neuralink is something that someone is going to do it. I've talked about this before, probably not since I've returned to video making, though. Our access to information is limited by the bandwidth of our fingers, and most people are just using their thumbs. People like me who have keyboards and mice everywhere and refuse to use our smartphones for anything, we have 8 digits that we type with. And this is the bandwidth. It's like we got this incredible brain, and then we have a repository of all human knowledge, and we have dial-up internet to try and interact with it. Someone somewhere is going to develop some kind, or try to develop some kind of wearable device that allows you to interact with the internet via thought. And it will vastly increase the pace at which you can then take in and export information. And I think these things are a long way off, but they're going to be developed. I don't think there's any stopping it. And so you have to ask yourself, who do you want to develop it? And the obvious answer in some ways is somebody who's dedicated to free speech and somebody who's dedicated to humanity and isn't anti-human. Now, here's some fly in the ointments when it comes to Elon Musk. There is still ongoing censorship on X. It is not the utopia that you might think it is. The algorithm has changed and it's putting things in your face that you don't want. I'm seeing it all the time. I'm seeing pornography. I'm seeing violence far more than I used to. I'm seeing political opinions and things that I don't even interact with. When I do get political opinions in my feed, I usually have to go and visit people to see what they've posted. That's an issue. If you disagreed, this is actually a hybrid point. Actually, how am I going to do this? Yeah, I'll just do it this way. This is a hybrid point. The H-1B visa debate caused a lot of accounts to get demonetized, have their paid for gold check mark or their paid for blue check mark removed from them. I doubt they got refunds. It just got taken away because they disagreed on this point, only for Musk to then turn around and say, you know what, it does need reform. He kind of backed off a little bit, but these people have still lost their privileges, and Musk doesn't direct it, or he doesn't address it directly. And that's a bit of a problem. There's still a lot of keywords that you can't say on X. You will be automatically, you'll be automatically suspended. TRANNY is one of those keywords. Give it a shot. You'll be asked to remove the post. It probably won't hurt you in the long run, but you can't say that word. Why is that? Why is that such an offensive word? People call people names all the time. There's an account on X right now. We're trying to get a direct harassment. Something done about direct harassment where this person's son is being threatened with death, and the most vile, vulgar insults you can imagine. It's direct, targeted harassment, and we can't seem to get anything done about it. There's a lot of us trying to get something done about it. We can't get anything done about it, but you can't say TRANNY. Why is that? I used Grok the other day. to research a children's book, because there's an event coming up in a while, and on the cover of the children's book is a rainbow, and it's a 6-banded rainbow. It's not a 7-banded rainbow. So I wanted to know what the contents of the book were, and so that I could make an informed decision about whether or not I want my children to attend this thing. So I asked Rock some targeted questions about the LGBTQ agenda, and Grok lectured me. Grok lectured me on the necessity of DEI and said that I should use different language when I'm talking about the rainbow community. It lectured me. So publicly, Musk is against DEI. Publicly, Musk is against the policing of free speech. But the AI is still lecturing me on what I should say and how I should say it. That's interesting. When it comes to looking at character behavior in your life, you should know, if you don't know already, if people will lie about the small things, they will lie about the big things. And people who lie as fluently as you and I tell the truth, because I avoid lying like the plague. The only time I will allow myself to lie is if I am hiding a birthday party from somebody. There's very rare circumstances where it's justified for me to tell a lie. So I do my best. I can be wrong about things, and I usually try to preface everything that I could be wrong. But I don't lie, and I do my very best not to deceive. I try to engage honestly. One of my biggest problems with certain individuals in this country right now is that they don't engage honestly. Politics is just trash. Anyway, back to the point. One of the little things when it comes to Elon Musk is he's misrepresented his success on Path of Exile 2. Now, if you don't know, Path of Exile 2 is a video game. It just came out. Apparently, it's pretty great. I follow the video game industry. Less so now, but over the course of time, I bought a lot of video games, and I seldom play any of them. I used to love games as a kid, but I seldom have time for it now. POE2 is free to play, and I'm not trying to plug the game. I'm telling you the background information. It's very popular. Millions of people play it every single day. And so he has represented that his character, implied that his character, is in the top 100 in the world on hardcore servers. Now, for those of you who don't know, hardcore means if you die, it's permanent, and you have to start over the whole game. These games are very big. They take hundreds of hours of intensive play for you to progress, and POE2 is very hard, even compared to its predecessor. It's like, if you're into gaming, it's like the Dark Souls of ARPGs, action role-playing games. Now, I know this is all kind of arcane, but please stick with me. He has misrepresented that character is his, and here's how I know that. In a recent stream where he tested the capabilities of X streaming, he displayed in his gameplay the most rookie playstyle that you could ever imagine. He's picking up individual pieces of loot and hand, moving them over to his inventory. He talks about the equipment he's wearing and its item level. And he has no idea what he's talking about because the equipment on the character is some of the best in the game and the item level doesn't mean anything. He's running around as the top 100, one of the top 100 toons in the game. He's running around out of mana, which is the fuel for casting spells and using abilities, and he's not even using his mana flask. He's just auto-attacking everything. It's not his tune. Now, I got no problem with somebody account sharing. I have no issue. This guy has a space company. He's got Tesla. He's working with the president. He's a very busy guy. He probably shouldn't have time. He couldn't even effectively open one of the endgame maps. At a point in the character's progression where he would have completed literally thousands of these maps, he didn't even know how to properly open one. So he's engaged in account sharing. Now, again, I preface this with, if you lie about the small things, if you misrepresent the small things, you'll misrepresent the big things. To me, personally, this misrepresentation, maybe it's playful, but I put it in the back of my mind. I file it as a red flag. Combine that with the censorship. Combine that with some of the other things that are going on. It's just a cautionary tale. Be careful. Save your faith for the Lord above. Save your faith for the kingdom. Do not put it in men. Trust but verify. There's a very real danger when the anti-establishment flips establishment that they may make their own mistakes and engage in the kind of a different brand of the things that you're hoping are replaced and made better. I mean, another interesting anecdote that I'll share with you, which I think is a cautionary tale. Alex Jones, he has regained prominence. His quest to survive the deconstruction of InfoWars is the stuff of internet lore, whether you like him or not. That's not what's on trial here. There's nothing on trial here. I'm just trying to inform you of what's actually happening out there so you can honestly think about it. I'm not going to give you any conclusions. Of course, I have my biases. We'll set that aside for later. Alex Jones, in his movie Endgame, which came out 20 years ago, give or take, talked about the North American Union. This was during Bush's time. And the Amero, which was the proposed currency that would unite us all. And he was very opposed to it. But now, he's an open advocate for North American Union. Now, I don't know if that includes Mexico or not, but that's an interesting change. Now, I've said as well, and this for some reason is very unpopular, I've studied intensively, more time than anybody should probably ever put into anything. I've studied intensively the entire saga of the Sandy Hook trials. And it's multiple trials. It's not one trial. It was many trials, and he lost them all. And I watched him in hours of deposition material and in hours of court footage that I put probably 100 to 200 hours into fully understanding this. I watched him lie over and over and over and over again. And that does not negate that politically he is targeted for destruction. Doesn't negate it. But I watched his character and what I thought of his character, it evaporated before my eyes. And in saying that out loud and revealing that truth, I am shutting a door of opportunity. But these are the cautionary tales. And there's more, but I think that's enough for now. Yes, okay. So it's been floated and since backed off on. It's actually incredibly funny how short-sighted Canadian politicians have been in their messaging. We're trying to talk a tough game, and really we should be as innocent as doves and as sly as snakes. I think Doug Ford and Elizabeth May, they're just flying off the cuff. They're just speaking. They're not thinking. There's no strategy. It's part of the problem with Canada is we don't have a really elite, intellectually superior House of Commons with people who actually think about what their messaging means. Polyev is about the best of them all. Doug Ford floated the idea that we would just cut off energy shipments to the United States, and this is what created some of the response, that China would just step in and buy it all up, even though the infrastructure doesn't exist. These are just words. If we cut energy supplies off to the United States, it would be like shooting them in a nice, meaty part of their leg. It would hurt, but they would survive. But at the same time, we would be shooting ourselves in the heart and the head multiple times a day until the nation was brought to its knees. We are unprepared to implement this level of rhetoric. So why are we even saying it? We're just making ourselves even more of a joke, which is why Doug Ford came up with the term AMCAN. And you note he put America first in that acronym because now he's trying to kiss their butt. What a failure. Doug Ford's a failure on so many levels. Just right of the NDP, leading Ontario, all the things that I talked to him personally about in his first run, the rallies I went to, the phone calls I had, talking about the communist takeover and everything, all the things that he and his people agreed to, they are the worst hypocrites. At the provincial level, they're the worst. Yeah, they're the worst. Because you can't even point a finger at Abby in BC, which that's an interesting fly in the ointment too, is that the Conservative Party is actually challenging those election results. Who is there with you on election night? talking about how fishy everything was. You can go back and you can look at the records. You can watch my videos on the subject. And now, finally, months later, the Conservative Party is actually doing something about it, the Conservative Party of BC. But anyway, thankfully for that. But you can't even point a finger at Ebby and say that he's a worse hypocrite, because at least he's honest with you. He's telling you he's screwing you, and he's telling you that you're going to like it. Ford was elected for change. He hasn't delivered change. Nothing in Ontario has changed. It's just gotten worse. But you can buy booze in the liquor store, or you can buy booze in convenience stores so that you can drown your sorrows. Back to the point, we can't cut the Americans off. If we do, it hurts us. It hurts us worse than them. They will suffer, but our dollar will crater. Your savings will disappear. I personally think it's a dangerous time. I don't really have any money, but if I had a lot of cash, I'd be getting rid of it. Me, personally. It's not financial advice. I'm telling you, I'd be putting it in gold. I'd be putting it in silver. I'd be putting it in things that will hold their value as the Canadian dollar craters, because these tariffs that Trump are talking about will bring this country to our knees, and nobody is going to be able to rescue us. There's also the issue of corruption in the United States, which may not be as great as here in Canada, because one of the things I forgot to mention is that the Chinese are directly influencing and buying off our politicians. We know that, but our government won't even give us the names because it's too damaging to the political parties. We're already in a bad way with China, and it's just part of the developing casus belli that the Americans, if they just told the truth, would have available to them. We inherit the deep state, and we inherit the corruption. So if in the next 4 years Trump fails yet again to deal with the deep-seated deep state, and corruption, we inherit that problem. And the annexation of Canada, even if we get full statehood, will create legions of new Democrats. However, things in the United States are leaning towards an even bigger surge for the Republicans in the midterms. We'll see. It's still 2 years off, but I don't see the Republican Party losing strength. And if Trump is successful with many of the initiatives that he is talking about, he does the things that he's going to do, it's going to nullify a lot of that problem. But the fact is, the deep state becomes part of the litmus. There's also the Canadian healthcare and the U.S. healthcare issue. Canadians, I addressed this a little bit in the first video, are married to the idea that our system is so great. Even though of the universal providers in the world, we are the worst, we're the most expensive, and our results are diminishing and people are suffering, a large part of it is overuse of the system, which no one wants to talk about because it's a very difficult subject. When you want to talk about the perennially unhealthy who will do nothing to improve their healthcare outcomes, clogging up the system because they refuse to stop drilling Big Macs even though they've had heart attacks and they're diabetic and they're in terrible shape and they're 500 pounds and they're in there getting all the services and clogging up the system, we're not allowed to talk about that. We're not allowed to talk about the people who are sitting in the ER just to get out of work because it's free. That happens a lot. They got a broken finger or something and they're just wasting time, or they've got a sniffle and they've got a cold and they're just sitting there hoping to get a doctor's notes. These are just a small sampling of the user side deficiencies in Canadian healthcare. But far bigger is the bureaucratic problem of Canadian healthcare. We resist change because the bureaucracy is so vested in the system. This is, remember how I said there's a lot of vested interests in the way that Federation is organized right now and how things are done right now that will never let it go because it would hurt them. It would hurt their pocketbook. It would hurt their grasp on their individual piece of power. And the administration and the bureaucracy and the unions themselves don't want to let go of their monopoly, one of the greatest draconian monopolies on healthcare in the entire civilized world. We can't solve Canadian healthcare problems by funding it more. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. The other side of this is, for a lot of things, diagnosis in particular, there's a lot that you can do. Like if you're a type 2 diabetic, most of the time you can reverse and solve that just by making some changes. Sometimes you just need a diagnosis so that you can go to whether, you know, sometimes you need an MRI, you need imaging done so that you can go to your chiropractor and work out a healthcare plan, and you're paying for chiropractology. I think that's the proper term. Forgive me if it's not. You're paying for that out of your pocket. You might be able to write some of it off on your taxes, but I mean, it's not covered under Canadian healthcare. A lot of groundbreaking procedures and a lot of alternative healthcare, you're not covered for. You have to pay for it yourself. If you want diagnostic imaging and you want a diagnosis, sometimes you're waiting a year and a half just to get that. Whereas you can drive across the Canadian border into the United States and you can pay $1,000 to $2,000, have all your answers, and have actual compassionate care delivered to you. Our medical practitioners, the good ones in this country, are incredibly limited by the Canada Health Act and by the way the provinces manage healthcare. There's a huge issue there. Another issue is Canada is not innovating in healthcare anymore. We look to the past and we celebrate some of the things we used to do, but we're not innovating. We're not investing in research and development. We are not launching the groundbreaking procedures that are changing the face of medicine. We're resisting them, or they're coming from other nations. The greatest innovator in healthcare in the world right now is the United States. So yes, the American system, which by the way, has a huge socialist component. There's this thing called Medicare. There's this other thing called Medicaid. It's not like the entire American system isn't private. A lot of the problems with the American system comes down to the insurance industry. But I think we're getting lost in the weeds. There are some benefits to be had by embracing a private component in your healthcare system. There is no reason why tens of thousands of Canadians every year should be going to the United States and paying out of pocket while they're paying high taxes here at home and a huge cost for healthcare. Healthcare ain't free here, folks. It's not free. It's like $10,000 a head off the top of my memory is what healthcare costs. And a lot of that is consumed by preventable illness. There's no incentive to change. There's no incentive for people to quit smoking two packs a day. There's no incentive for them to stop drilling burgers and killing themselves. They just walk in to our free system, which is costing you an enormous portion of your tax dollars. It ain't free. It's never been free. Other nations that deliver universally have private components. Private is a big part of what they do. Take the United States off the table. Private incentives make your system more efficient and deliver better services. Those who have merit, those who deliver results, get to make more money. And other universal providers, hear that, other universal providers in this world do it better, and we don't even take a look at how they do it better. Part of the reason our system is broken is many of the things that Tommy Douglas, and I got some problems with Tommy too, many of the recommendations that he had for developing universal health care in Canada were not implemented. Our system only took a few of them and left the rest out, which is why we have slowly been breaking over the decades. So let's not paint a picture of Canadian healthcare utopia versus American healthcare hell, because many of the people that I know had to go down there to get life-changing advice, life-saving advice, life-saving treatment that they couldn't get here. The system's broken. Just conferring with my notes again, because I want to make sure I get most of this out in this video. There might be a third part coming up, but there's other things I need to talk about in the world. There's so much that there is out there. There's so much to do. It's not just China that has infiltrated your government. The interests of foreign countries are directly represented in your MPs, whether it's Somalis, whether it's Hindis, whether it's Khalistani Sikhs. The interests of other nationalities, ethnicities, and cultures have representation in your House of Commons by the very people who say that Canada has no core national identity. We are so thoroughly undermined. All of the people who say that their grandparents didn't die so America could rule, you have sat on your hands and quietly voted for parties who have been giving your country away to worse systems of thought, worse systems of religion, peoples who conspire to ethnically cleanse one another. They've gutted your industries. They have sold you out for their interests. And you said nothing. You celebrated it because your media told you to celebrate it. Now you're trying to rediscover your nascent nationalism because we have a threat from the United States, which has a better system of government and more freedom and liberty for their people than you do. Well, your nation has been given away and weakened to a point where they can legitimately make a joke out of us, and there's nothing we can do about it? Got to give that a rest, folks. That is just, I mean, people need to wake up. People really need to wake up. They got to start thinking about this stuff, because it's not good. A good leader's obligation is to his people, not his nation, not an institution, to the people. Because I've heard it said, and I've read it said, that all Polyev is going to do is come into office and give the nation away to Elon Musk and the quote-unquote MAGA chuds. Has anybody noticed there's a real sharp decline in the intelligence and self-control of left-wing commentators, whether it's on X or on YouTube? They swear, they're vile, they're piggy, they're base. They celebrate the dysfunction of human society. They're literally rotting us from the inside out. And they want to lecture us on what's good for us. They want to lecture us on morality. They want to lecture us on the future of a country they don't even understand. Most of the things I've explained in these last two videos, none of them are even aware of. They wear purple hair. They're morbidly obese. They're more concerned with killing babies and cutting off the viable reproduction of our kids before they reach the age of maturity. That's their world, and they want to lecture us, and you want to be browbeaten into silence by these freaks? Anyway, that's a separate point. The freaks shouldn't be running anything. We need adults at the table, and we need, dare I say, people who are of stable family backgrounds. Male, female, children, demographic growth, greater representation of that, and greater pride in those things. They're the best. Come at me. A leader's obligation is to his people, not to an institution or a nation. So even if it were true that Pierre was elected and he could not save Confederation, he said it in the Peterson interview. He's like, they have the party and conservatives get to clean up the mess. What a daunting task that man and his government are going to have. We face threats from the outside. We're broke. We're deconstructed in all the ways that I've told you. And just to reiterate something I said in the first video, every institution in Canada is infected with leftist ideologues. The Senate, which is appointed until its members are 75, we have no capacity to pull down any senators. 85 out of 100 are controlled, liberal, progressive, radicals. The judiciary is controlled. The municipalities, not just your elected councils, but the people who occupy the chief administrative office, the people who are the CFOs, many of them are fully immersed in the rainbow DEI mindset, which is so deconstructing our society. The headwinds that Pierre faces are almost insurmountable. Now, let's pretend he can. Let's pretend he can get a deal done before our country is completely brought to its knees. Let's pretend that he can solve the external crises, that somehow he can balance the budget, that somehow he can do it while maintaining his party's support so that he can get reelected, that somehow he can overcome the opposition of the Senate and the judiciary, that somehow he can miraculously overcome the resistance from the liberal left-wing premiers of all the different provinces, that he can do all those things, and he can set this country on course. You are still left with the core problem of the Federation. You're still left with the fact that the Bloc Québécois and Quebec separatism has risen. You're still left with the fact that this country is completely unfairly composed and that it is designed to take advantage of the West to the advantage of the East and not give us any say. You're still left with the fact that we can't directly do anything about our politicians and that we are a backwards nation. When he said that Westminster parliamentarianism in Canada is the best in the world, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard Poilievre say. We are a backwards, broken nation, and the status quo will not make it better. So, to finish, there is an opportunity presented by the United States to solve a lot of those problems with the Federation. To even begin a discussion. If Canada is suffering immensely, and we might, that might create enough political will to actually tell the truth about this nation and how it has failed to progress this last 100 years. We need to bring it into the modern era, one way or another. Walking into the arms of China and allowing them to save us is walking into totalitarian hell. Communist hell. What? Pretending that everything is okay and moving on the status quo into the future, your taxes are going to get higher. Your economic opportunities are going to shrink. We won't solve the rampant real estate problem. We won't solve the foreign ownership problem. There's a very real argument for Fortress North America. There's a very real argument for trying to get that done. But short of that, creating the political will to actually have all the difficult conversations in this country and realize how broken successive governments have left you and how backwards we are, that should be the real objective. This should open a conversation about everything wrong with the way this country is designed, because it's a huge list with almost no pros. Come at me. Call me a traitor. I don't care. That's the truth, and that's all I'm here to give you. I'm Frank Vaughn, and I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link and one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.